Do we have, you're supposed to bring children to work today, okay. And I don't see them.
Good morning. This is House State Affairs. It's 8:10 on Thursday, April 27th. And we have present Representative Elkins, Representative Gartner, Representative Lynn, Representative Gatto, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Seaton, Representative Ramirez is excused. And at this time, I'd like to remind everybody to turn their cell phones off. Today we have two bills for us. We're going to change the order. Senator Huggins, sponsor of 189, has commitments later, so we're going to take Senate Bill 189 first, and then we will take Senate Bill 86. Senator Huggins, would you like to come forward and introduce the bill, please?
Is it okay if I have my... Oh,
absolutely. And if you would introduce yourself for the record and then introduce your staff as well.
Yeah, Charlie Huggins, Mat-Su, Senate District H.
Debbie. For the record, my name is Deborah Grunman, staff to Senator Huggins.
What was that again?
Debbie Grunman, staff to Senator Huggins.
Okay. Did you want this back?
Very good. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Myself and Representative Lynn teamed up based on the Real ID Act, and what I'd like to do is, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, is walk you through where we've been thus far, and which brings us here today, and the essence of what I think the bill is all about. And it's really about allowing Americans to get a driver's license and some others having, in particular, having provisos for them receiving a license, and that we, or in fact, know who has a driver's license. In the case of the Senate, there was multiple committees. This bill passed out of the Senate with a vote of 17-1, as I recall, with overwhelming support by both majority and minority. So. It's been through at least one venue, and people came to a conclusion in that case. But in this case, we know that the world we live in is different than when we grew up, and much different in some cases. But we know when we go to the airport, we take our shoes off. We know that when we go to the airport, we use our Alaska driver's license to be able to get on an airplane. And if the only thing you had to identify yourself, Alaska driver's license, it's acceptable, it will get you on the airplane. Now the question is whether we tighten up by virtue of an instrument like this bill to make sure we know who has that driver's license. And let's just take scenarios for a moment. If I'm a student coming from you name your country outside the United States of America, and I come here and I have an indefinite student visa, then I can get a driver's license for 1 year. And at the end of that year, I will have to go back down to DMV, show them my authorization to be in the country, in this case as a student, and I can get a new driver's license. Now, my opinion and the people I've talked to include some of my Senate colleagues when we went through this previously, was we understand that that's an imposition on students, but it's a rational imposition, that we know where they live, we know they're still a student, they're still in our state. We think that's okay. The same reason we think it's okay to have to take our shoes off at the airport. If I am here and I have a visa to visit for 1 year, I can get a 1 year driver's license. Under our present rules, as I recall, I think a driver's license expires after 5 years. If you literally took our system as it works, you get a driver's license for 5 years, even though you're going to be here for 1 year. I as a person, like my good friend Bob Lynn, having served our country once upon a time, think that that's not unreasonable. Not unlike having to take your shoes off at the airport, because we're in extraordinary times. So the question becomes, what is the role of a driver's license? Well, we all think, and I believe, is to be able to drive a vehicle. But in fact, in our society, it's broader than that. It's an instrument that gets you, go down to cash a check. They'll ask you for your driver's license ID numbers because it's used for a number of purposes, not just to be able to drive a vehicle. Now, I know that there are some that are concerned about, you know, people having to show additional information to verify. There are always scenarios which are hard to get to the bottom of who the person is. I know when I took my son, I think Representative Gatto had the same sort of occasion, both my son and daughter, when I took them down to get a driver's license initially, we went back multiple times because we had to have a birth certificate. One of my sons was born in Korea. That's particularly difficult, but that's okay with me because I'm satisfied that a little bit of sacrifice by myself and my son to be able to say that that really is my son. We really know where he was born by virtue of his birth certificate and other documents. I think that's okay. Some say, that I've heard this before on the national media, the country's at war, what sacrifices do we need to make? Well, we're not looking for ways to make sacrifices, but there are, in fact, and I invite each of us to think about this for a moment, that our country is the battleground. If you don't believe me, think about September the 11th. Why, when you look on your television at the bottom of the monitor, it has the security alert level. Why is that? Because we live on the battleground now. And our driver's license is a license for our passage in a number of places in our society. I think this bill is reasonable. We know that to be in compliance with the National ID Act, that in fact, I think it's 2008, our driver's license will not be acceptable for identification on a national level. And then there's a reciprocal between states. You know, some have the opinion that, you know, that act's going to be modified. I don't know. I can only go on what it says today. And this bill will bring us very close to being in compliance, maybe completely in compliance, and Mr. Dwayne Bannock and DMVA can speak to that more intellectually. I just say it as a good citizen that served our country, walked through the jungles of Vietnam, looked in the eyes of the communists that some people talk about, fixing to send my son over to Iraq, that I think this is a reasonable thing to do for Alaskans. And to turn our back on this, I would just ask you to think about that before you do it.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee, the sponsor? Representative Gatto.
Just a statement and a question. You're absolutely right when you talked about our sons. With regard to DMV, I walked down there with my son. I said, "You've got a photo ID?" He says, "I got my school ID card." No good. Got to have a birth certificate. Walked down the second time with a birth certificate. No good. It's got to be a state birth certificate, not a hospital birth certificate. Walked down the third time with a state birth certificate. And finally, we can now enter into the database. The database was somewhat more inclusive now that he couldn't just use a simple thing like, "I'm his dad, here's my ID, here's his photo ID from school." I think the concern is for all of us, a great many people, and I hope we address these during this committee, is that the basic question is, do we trust our government? If indeed we turn over data to our government, what will they do with it? Now, we haven't had an issue of our government hammering us all into submission over slavery or something like that, but governments change every 4 to 8 years to a large degree. So I think as we move through this, I don't have a question for you in that regard, but I keep that in mind of, do we trust them? And there's certainly a great many government people that I see here in the state that I would trust with my life. But on the large scale, we are now entering into a 50-state cooperative agreement. It's not only trusting the people I know here, it's trusting the people in Cincinnati and in Cleveland and in Tallahassee. And I don't know them as well as I know the people here. So as we move on, that's the overriding question I have, is one of trust. And I would like to say I do trust them because I trust the government as a large group. So So far, that's the ultimate question for me, and I know we'll get into a lot of details, but that is the question for me to be answered.
And I guess, Senator Huggins, I appreciate your presentation. I know you've got a short time, but I guess maybe you hit on the key of what this committee has been trying to consider and wrestle with is, you know, your question was, what is the role of the driver's license? And I would like you to address of what you are projecting to have the role of the driver's license be under this bill.
Well, this is not my idea, all right, as far as what the driver's license is or is not. It's what we practice. And so this bill really validates what we practice in our society. As I mentioned before, the business of reciprocal between states will be reliant upon whether or not we are in compliance with the ID Act. So that's in a larger sense. But we know, as I said before, and I'll repeat myself, if you go down to cash a check, they will ask you for your driver's license number if it's not on your check. I mean, I do it every day when I go to cash a check. When I go to fly home to Wasilla or to Anchorage, getting to Wasilla, and I get ready to get on an airplane, I pull out my driver's license, they look at that picture, and they accept that just like I was getting to get into a Maserati to drive it if a policeman was checking to see if I had my license before I got into it, because our society accepts that.
And could you show them a passport instead, or could you show them another?
Well, I couldn't show them a passport because I don't carry it with me. The thing that all of us carry, that and most of us drive vehicles, is our driver's license. I know that when, and I think most of us, I have a large wallet. It's not in my pocket because it's too large today. But when I go to do things, and I'm going to fly my airplane out to hunt moose, or I'm going to drive someplace, then I take a skeletal wallet. One of the items will be in there will be my driver's license and my hunting license or my fishing license, because it's my passport in our society. It is. I mean, that is the practice of our driver's license. Now, its number one function is to validate that you, in fact, qualified and the state recognizes your driving habits on the road. But it's much bigger than that in our society. And this bill recognizes that. And our country says, on a national level, our leaders have voted for a proposition that says it is used in a larger capacity. And this bill recognizes that.
So then, I mean, it basically this saying, okay, before you can cash a check, you're not going to be able to use any other ID. Basically, we're saying the only ID that you could use for cashing a check is a driver's license?
I can tell you, when I cash a check, unhesitatingly, the only questions asked is, I need your driver's license ID number.
And if you don't give them to that, if you don't give that
don't
to
cash
them,
a check. That's my experience. I mean, because our society, it's the instrument that's used for identification of doing transactions. When I go to the bank to make a withdrawal, they say, let me see a picture ID. I put down my driver's license.
Yeah, and Senator Huggins, I want to see a picture ID. Now, is the picture ID what they ask for, or do they ask for your driver's license? And you happen to have your driver's license,
and that what they recommend? To be quite frank, most say, let me see your driver's license, because they know that's a picture ID. That is one of the few picture IDs that I carry. I don't know, maybe others carry other picture IDs, but that's the one that's common to all Alaskans that drive vehicles.
Thanks. Do other committee members? Yes, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Senator Huggins, in the sponsor statement, it says that Senate Bill 189 is designed to bring Alaska into compliance with the new federal Real ID Act. And the fiscal note says, other costs may be associated with the Real ID Act that will not be noted until later. Can we have an explanation about that?
Yeah, well, Mr. Bannock is here. If we could have Dwayne come up. Dwayne, could you come up?
Good morning. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Good morning, sir. My name is Dwayne Bannock with the Department of Administration, today representing the Division of Motor Vehicles.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Gardner, to answer that question, Our fiscal note is specific to this particular bill, Senate Bill 189. And as I've testified previously, the companion bill that you've heard a couple of times, the House companion bill, this bill in front of you is a portion of the Real ID Act. I'm pleased to tell you that the majority of the Real ID Act is already in practice at the state of Alaska. The difficult part to answer the question and to fully explain my last sentence in the fiscal note, as we speak, the Federal Rulemaking Committee that is determining the minutiae of the bill is in play. Those actual rules for implementation have not yet been determined. And quite frankly, that's a good reason to attempt to criticize the Real ID Act. Although I don't believe that that criticism is fair to this particular bill.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner, follow up.
Is there any reason we shouldn't wait until all those rules are in place before we attempt to comply?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I would say no. And if I may, I'll explain why I would say no. Because there does not appear to be anything in the Federal Rulemaking Committee that leads to any gray area as to the question, is legal presence a requirement under the Real ID Act? That does not appear to be anything that the Rulemaking Committee is working on. We in Alaska do not have, by statute, a legal presence. And legal presence is simply defined as legally being in America. Now, most of us, and most of us in Alaska, are Americans. Yet there is another group that are also just as legal as Americans. Everyone that fits under that umbrella of in America legally, that's who this bill is talking about. And so, again, in short, no, I don't believe that we should wait. Quite frankly, we do not anticipate any other legislation to change statutes as a result of the Rulemaking Committee.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you. I might add, this morning, as late as this morning, as I recall, the number one item on the priority list of Americans of things that are happening societally and internationally is immigration. That's their number one concern. This bill, that's the essence of what it's about in the respect to people coming to our country. Gets at that very quickly, and I think in a positive way from the average American's perspective. I mean, I think if you go to Anchorage, I know if you go to Matsu and you ask them about somebody that's visiting and they're legal, they think that there should be some parameters on that, and that if you're illegal, you shouldn't have an Alaska driver's license.
Mr. Bannock, I guess, would you lead us through what is currently acceptable identification for the issuance of a driver's license, and under this bill, what would be then acceptable identification, and how you're going to handle that identification?
I'll do my best. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you may have a copy that I provided about a week and a half ago from our standard operating procedures that actually breaks it down into the exact document. Forgive me as I scan through here. I would tell you that the two most common documents that we see are birth certificates.
Mr. Chair, I don't recall seeing such a document in my file.
We didn't.
I didn't either.
Sir, it was forwarded to your staff.
Okay.
Oh. And I'm sorry that you don't have that in front of you. There were 4 pages of regulations and 4 pages from our standard operating procedures.
It may have gotten put into the bill packet for, instead of 199, for HB 290.
It would have been submitted for that, yes, sir. And forgive me, 3 pages of each. 3 pages of regulations and 3 pages from our standard operating procedures. And I can certainly make sure that you have copies of these before we leave today, or perhaps right now. What you're going to see, thank you, on page 1 is a list of what we call primary documents. On page 2, you will see a list of secondary documents. The Division of Motor Vehicles requires two documents, a minimum of one primary and one secondary, or you could have two primaries.
You're talking currently?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Very little of that is going to change when this bill becomes law. And as I have testified earlier, and perhaps I've led people astray, and forgive me if I have, as I've testified earlier, by regulation and by practice today, I'm here to tell you, illegal aliens do not get driver's licenses in Alaska. That's why there's not a massive shift. The most common document that is used by people that perhaps are illegal aliens is represented in this bill, the matricular consular card. If you go back just a couple years ago in time with me to the great state of California, and arguably it was a bill, or the opposite, basically, of this bill that cost Governor Gray Davis his job, when California was poised to say the opposite of what this bill says. The great state of California was in a position to say, illegal aliens, we want you to have driver's licenses. This bill says, with very little fanfare, to get an identification card, a state of Alaska issued identification card, or a state of Alaska issued driver's license, you must be able to prove your presence in America legally. The story about both of your sons, this bill has zero effect on that story. They're in America legally. You and I are in America legally. This bill will not have any effect on us.
So you, are you, oh, well, we're waiting for the.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner, while we're waiting for
the passing. Do you anticipate that when the regulations are done and we know the actual costs of implementation, that there will be a mechanism in place to keep copies of all the documents that you're requiring and make them available to other states?
Through the chair, yes and no. Yes, there will be a mechanism in place for the retention of the verification documents. Today we look at these documents. I testified to you that if you looked at my driving record today, my DMV record, it would say that Dwayne Banoff was born on July 29, 1964 in San Gabriel, California. The only document today that backs that up is an application of sorts that perhaps my mother filled out and gave to the DMV. The good people at the DMV looked at it, verified that that's what it was, returned my mother my birth certificate. The no part of it is after we retain it, unlike much of the testimony that you're hearing and that you're reading, that is not shared with other states. And here's some more new information for you. What is shared with other states under the Real ID Act, which, forgive me because I'm straying off of the bill and I didn't even want to stray off the bill, that too is being done today. It's being done today under the Driver's License Compact, the DLC as we call it. The DLC is authorized in statute 2837. And today, I'll pick on the chair if I may for just a second, 20, 30 years ago, he was in college and he got a DUI. The Alaska DMV, in another state, the Alaska DMV would know about that. We could know about that under the Driver's License Compact, which is already a state law today, and every state in the union participates in that. What is new that you're hearing about is that now it becomes part of a federal mandate, but again, it's not a shift from what we're doing today. Today we do search other states. When you come in and when Representative Lynn comes in and he says that his last driver's license used to be from California, then we will check that. And we will check to see if he was licensed in California and what class of license he had and if he was suspended or if he is currently revoked, et cetera, et cetera. That's happening today. The idea that's been fostered that there is this national database that we plug all of this information into, that is a false assumption. The Real ID doesn't ask for it, nor does this bill.
Representative Gardner and then Representative Gatto.
Thank you. And is that also true for the documentation that people show? I mean, I know currently you keep a record of the date and place of birth. Do you keep copies of birth certificates, or will you under the Real ID Act?
Through the chair, madam, no, we do not today. Yes, we intend to by May of 2008.
And in follow-up, will those be available to other states as well?
No, ma'am.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we have 50 states, do all 50 states require a state-certified birth certificate?
Through the chair, I'm certainly not in a position to answer for every other state, but I'm going to go way out on a limb and say no.
So you could then accept as identification a driver's license from any other state that issued a driver's license and have reciprocity and issue an Alaska driver's license?
Yes, today.
Today you could do that. But yet you require a state birth certificate here, but you will accept a driver's license from another state that never did require a state birth certificate. So I see this as a kind of a, if I was trying to cheat, I can't get away with it here, but if I can produce a driver's license from Ohio that didn't require it, I can come over here and get my driver's license. And the point is that does that diminish the certification value of an Alaska driver's license if there is more than one way to get it?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, you're 100% correct. We call that one of the giant loopholes. I'll pick on the great state of Louisiana with all respect to Representative Crawford. The great state of Louisiana has a reputation in the DMV world as being the loosest state for identification verification. However, a person that comes today to your Division of Motor Vehicles office and presents the Louisiana driver's license, then we take that Louisiana driver's license at face value. We take it that his name really is Representative Harry Crawford, and he was born on this particular date and place, et cetera, et cetera. Pending regulations will eliminate that option.
This statute?
No, sir. Not this statute. Pending regulations, because it is by regulation today that we take another state's driver license. That's by regulation. That's not by your crazy DMV director's design. That's by regulation. We are striking that and taking it out so that when a member from another state or a former resident comes into our state, we will take the driver's license that proves that they know how to drive, but not that their name, just as a for instance, some states take a student ID, as you had mentioned. There's a good reason why Alaska doesn't take a student ID. My son's name is Anthony Bannock. His student ID is Tony Bannock. His name is not Tony Bannock. He's called Tony Bannock, but his legal name is not Tony Bannock. If he went to a state that took the student ID for the driver's license name would be Tony Bannock. If he then brings his Louisiana driver's license to Alaska, under the regulations today, we would call him Tony Bannock. But he's not really Tony Bannock, is he? He's really Anthony Bannock. So, in closing on that comment, sir, you are 100% correct. That's a problem. It's a problem that your division is addressing as we speak.
And you're addressing that by regulations under statutory direction, or just by regulations such as these other ones? I mean, you're just developing these regulations?
Actually, they're nearing the end, and we are projecting an implementation date of July 1st.
Okay.
Our hope is that those new regulations will coincide with the implementation of this law.
So then if someone comes from another state, unless that state has adopted the Real ID Act, which none have done to date, I guess, their driver's license will not be served for getting an Alaska driver's license.
I don't think that's correct. What we will not be doing is taking any state's driver's license as proof of identity at the DMV. It will be proof that they know how to drive and that they have passed their skills test.
Okay, So then no one can get an Alaska driver's license without having either a passport or a certified Alaska or Canadian birth certificate.
Those are examples, sir. But what would happen is that person that comes to us from Louisiana brings us their Louisiana driver's license, see this list, find two items off of this list, because your Louisiana driver's license doesn't cut it any longer. Today, your Louisiana driver's license cuts it. July, your Louisiana driver's license will not cut it.
Okay, and if you have a driver's license which is doesn't conform to the Alaska driver's license, at what point do you need to get Alaska driver's license having been in the state and under the new regulations? What, how long can you drive on a driver's license that is issued in a state that doesn't have the certification under the Real ID Act?
Mr. Chairman, that portion of the law is not changing. Your answer is 90 days. The state of Alaska honors another state's or jurisdiction, as it's called, another jurisdiction's driver's license for up to, 90 days.
So
that's not subject to change in either this statute or in any of the pending regulations.
Okay, but what I'm trying to find out is, so we have people come up for the summer in the fishing industry, in mining, whatever. They have to get a Alaska driver's license in 90 days if they're going to operate a motor vehicle. And their driver's license will serve to notify that they know how to drive, but not for the issuance of a driver's license. And they can't turn that in on a reciprocal basis then after these new regulations go into effect.
Correct. It does not satisfy the identity requirement. I should say, let me correct that if I may. It will not satisfy. If we're talking about next September,
right,
theoretically, it will not satisfy that requirement.
Because as I understand it right now, it does satisfy the requirement. They come in with their driver's license from the other state. They turn it in. They can get a Alaska driver's license.
Yes, sir. Correct.
And under these provisions with this statute and under the regulations that you're proposing now that haven't gone into effect, they will not be able to do that. They'll have
close to correct, sir. Yeah. Again, that section doesn't have anything to do with the statute change. That, what you're describing, has to do with our regulation change.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the present moment, an out-of-state license exchanged for an Alaska license, does that zero the clock so that the expiration date, was it 6 years? I don't know what it is. If their license had been ready to expire in 3 days and we exchange it for an Alaska license, do we get more than 3 days?
Through the chair, yes. Under Alaska statute today, before this change, under Alaska statute, your license will expire on your birthday in the following 5 years, on your birth date in the following fifth year.
Okay.
So basically, a driver's license today, by statute, every one that we issue are for 5 years.
Okay.
Representative Gatto.
Follow up. I don't know if you would know this, but maybe you do. Would I be allowed to pass security at the airport with an expired license? Do they check the date or simply the fact that I have my photo ID and it's a real license?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I have asked that question to Alaska Airlines 3 times, that exact question. I cannot give you an answer to that.
Okay. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. In answer to Representative Gatto's question, my husband had an expired driver's license and couldn't get on a plane.
He couldn't.
Right. He might have been able to had he pushed it, but he had to get a passport when he got that. My question is, if you have an out-of-state license and you come to Alaska and get an Alaska's driver's license, do you have to surrender your out-of-state license?
Ma'am Gardner, yes, ma'am. And if I could just expand very, very briefly. When a person comes in from another state, we take their driver's license with the presumption of that's their identity. We take the driver's license with the presumption that they know how to drive, and we require that they take our written test that most of us did perhaps when we were 14 years old, which is mostly pointed to the law of Alaska and much less on how to drive a car.
Okay, and follow up, Representative Gardner. Representative Greenberg.
Under current law in Alaska, they're supposed to get an Alaska driver's license if they're here for more than 90 days. And they failed to do that, but they still have an out-of-state license. Are they then a licensed driver, allowing the terms of their insurance to be in effect, or do they lose that?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I don't know that I could answer that. Regretfully, your Division of Motor Vehicles is not set up from an enforcement point of view. But the law is clear. It's not just being here for 90 days. You don't have to drive, but a license is recognized by state statute for 90 days if you want to drive in Alaska.
Follow-up, Representative Gardner?
Yeah, I think it was you, but it may have been somebody else, who testified when we previously heard this bill that in order to have insurance, you have to have a valid driver's license.
Through the chair, I did not testify to that. I've heard that. Clearly, that's an erroneous statement citing both company-owned vehicles that obviously get insured, and also there are a growing number of scenarios that I refer to as the driving Miss Daisy clause. And if you'll remember that movie, we had the lady that owned the car, yet she didn't drive. She had a driver. And believe it or not, that is becoming more prevalent in Alaska.
Reverend Gatto. Do you have a follow-up on
yes, thank you.
Question?
I would have to believe, though, that if I own a car and I have insurance on my vehicle and somebody who is unlicensed is driving it, it would sort of void the insurance coverage.
Through the chair, I could not professionally answer that question without a shadow of a doubt.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Gatto.
If I drive to Alaska in my car from my home state of Ohio, and I stay on the, and I'm still here on the 91st day, have I committed a violation?
Mr. Chairman, respectfully, Mr. Gatto, I'm not the policeman. I'll just say that the law says that the license is valid for 90 days.
So I would be an unlicensed driver.
I'm saying that the law says that the license is valid to use in under Alaska rules for 90 days. So you would be outside the umbrella of the Alaska rules.
Thank you. I know it's off the topic, but I'm opportunity to clarify rules that we deal with occasionally.
And Representative Greenberg?
Yes, thank you. We're having the regulation duplicated at the moment, Mr. Bannock.
I'm sorry.
No, this isn't the regulation. This is the, you're one step ahead of me, Mr. Chair. If the members would look at the standard operating procedure D-20 that Mr. Bannock has thoughtfully provided. Mr. Bannock, I note that the regulation that is promulgated under is 13 AAC 08.330 paren small b, close paren. That is your regulatory authority for this standard operating procedure, sir?
Yes, sir, right now.
Okay. And Ms., if Michael, if you just duplicate that, and Katie can get that out, please.
Thank you.
The regulation itself is being duplicated and given out here. And am I correct, as I recall, a procedure in an administrative agency must follow the regulation. It can't go beyond the regulation. Am I not correct?
Yes, sir, I believe that's correct.
Okay. I'm looking at subsection B of the regulation on page 1 here. It looks to me like your standard operating procedure requires only certain birth certificates of United States or Canadian, and those countries are limited to the types. You have to have identification from only those countries. But it doesn't look like the regulation limits birth certificates or anything else, primary identification documents, only to those countries. By narrowing it only to those countries, aren't you going beyond the scope of your regulatory authority, sir?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's a good argument. You're a lot smarter than I am, and I would suggest that after doing the review that I've done over the last couple of weeks, I think you could successfully argue that case. To defend the division, which I do often, a little farther down, what we find in that particular section is...
A section of, you're talking about the reg?
In the reg, yes. Forgive me. I have it highlighted in my book. The in number four, the first line is other evidence of comparable validity. So to suggest, for instance, let's just say any country, Japan.
Sure.
We don't have the ability to compare the validity of a Japanese birth certificate. Now, if I may, sir, I think you're perhaps making the argument we don't have that authority to be able, and so when the person presents their Japanese birth certificate, we must honor that. That is today an absolutely outstanding point. And because of the research that I've done over this, to follow up on some of your excellent questions, you have raised an absolutely excellent position. I must say that in my 3 years, it's the first time it's been raised. When I reviewed that particular point, when I stumbled in, and I'm going letter by letter with my number one driver's license issue, because, you know, no one's ever made that point. No one's ever challenged that. It's been there as long as she's been there. Sure. And so you may be right on that point.
Mr. Chair, I want you to know, and I want to put it absolutely on the record here, that that my questions to you today and in the past have been designed to make certain that you and the division are on very firm legal footing. We in this legislature have a duty to make certain that our state government is protected legally. And that's the spirit in which I'm asking my questions. And I just want to put that on.
And did you get the memo that I had sent down called Questions from House State Affairs Committee 4-4? Because that memo kind of goes to this point, and let me just read the very last line. If the committee concurs with Representative Grunberg's opinion, the DMV today does not have the authority to deny an application for a driver's license to an illegal alien, then I believe that underscores the point and purpose of this pending legislation.
I would tend to, Mr. Chair, yes, that is exactly my point, that this legislation would, without doubt, make this standard operating procedure legal. And that's exactly my point, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Grunberg. And I don't want to get off the bill here. We are, though the regulations do in Section 4, as you point out, name other identifications, and it seems like Representative Gatto should not have had the problem he did with the DMV or Senator Huggins, because it says that the other evidence of comparable validity, and then it's saying such items as Social Security card, credit card, life insurance, or other evidence of comparable validity. So it appears that there has been some narrowing beyond the law of the allowable documents, but that's not where we're at today. What we're dealing with today is this bill. And so,
Mr. Chairman, I would only say two things. That number one, oftentimes I need to apologize for the actions that take place in our offices. The specific subject of driver's licensing, of birth certificates for identification, has been addressed in my short tenure. Today, I can assure you, the committee, I can assure the world, any document that is a birth certificate that uses the word certified will be accepted at the Division of Motor Vehicles, whether it's certified by the Central Peninsula General Hospital, where my boys were born, or the one that we get from the Department of Health, because okay. That's what the law says, a certified birth certificate.
That's fine. And like I said, I don't want to get too far off on the...
Thank you.
We're not having an oversight hearing for DMV here. And so, Representative Lynn.
Just one simple question, Mr. Bannock, and thank you for coming here. Do you agree that a driver's license is a privilege? not a right, and the legislature and by extension the department sets those standards for that privilege. It's a privilege, not a right, to have a driver's license anywhere in the country and by extension Alaska.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, that is a statement of statute, Alaska statute. The privilege to drive is the word that the statutes use.
Thank you.
Thanks. And Representative Gatto?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. What would happen if a perfectly legitimate certified American went in to get his driver's license because he needed it for ID and couldn't pass his driver's test? He would not have then the ID that we are trying to essentially say, this is your ID now.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, that's a pretty good point and a point that this bill does address. Keep in mind, this bill in front of you is for two documents that the DMV sells. One is an identification card, and one is a driver's license. So while some of the debate has issued on should a driver's license be required to be done when we cash a check or get on an airplane, just take that and throw it in the trash if you want to. And the other half of the bill speaks to an identification card, which its only goal in life is to prove your identity. Oftentimes, people in Alaska lose their driving privileges, and they physically have their driver's license taken away from them for all kinds of reasons. Then oftentimes that same customer will come to the division to buy an identification card just so that they don't have those particular issues.
And Representative Gatto, follow up.
Just curious as to whether or not you can get both. If you lose your driver's license, do you physically surrender it or not? And then can I get both because I feel like it?
Through the chair, yes. Oftentimes people do have them for traveling purposes. They sandbag one so that if they lose their wallet in Disneyland, they go back to the hotel and stuffed in the suitcase is their identification card.
Okay, I think chair, that we'll go to public testimony. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm going to have to vote here in a few moments in another committee. Could I just make a couple of comments
sure.
Before I depart, and if there are any further questions, to answer those. There's been some great questions here, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate representing Grunberg's point of that we can come into compliance with some of the things that Dwayne is doing by simply passing this act. I mean, just a simple act. We've done that on the Senate side, a vote of 17 to 1. When you go into our schools today, the staff members have around their neck their picture, their identification. You have to do that to be on that school grounds. Has nothing to do with driver's license, but it's their driver's license for the school. Because that's how extraordinary our country has changed in a different respect. But there's an equivalency. We know what happened at Pearl Harbor, exceeded only by September the 11th. People that want to do harm to our country. And I say that in this case, as Alaskans, as legislators, we can do our little piece to tighten up our state's perspective to guard against people that may want to do harm here illegally or other things of extension. Do we want to tread on the liberties of good, upstanding Americans? Absolutely not. But sometimes we all have to take off our shoes. And I ask you today, when you think about this, when you go to the airport, you take your shoes off because it's become an expectation. And there are some expectations that are new to us in our country. And I just ask you to think about that today when you gain the opportunity to finally consider this bill. And with that, I thank you very much.
Thank you for coming, Senator. Let's see. We'll go to public testimony. First of all, we have, let's go off net first. Margaret Stock, are you online?
Yes, this is Margaret Stock.
Would you identify yourself, who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony, and if you could keep it to about 3 minutes, please.
Yes, I'll try to do that. Thank you very much. My name is Margaret Stock, S-T-O-C-K. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Law at the United States Military Academy at West Point, New York. I'm also a lieutenant colonel in the military police in the United States Army Reserve, and I'm also an Alaskan. I'm here, however, in my personal capacity, and everything I'm saying is my personal opinion only and not the opinion of any government agency. I'm testifying because I have reviewed SB 189, and I would like to let the committee know that, in fact, it is not in compliance with the Real ID Act of 2005. It's definitely going to require a serious amendment to be in compliance with the Real ID Act of 2005, and it's also facially unconstitutional as written under the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, as well as under the Alaska Constitution. I have some expertise in making those statements because, in fact, I was the attorney in a class action lawsuit filed against the State of Alaska Department of Revenue several years ago, and I prevailed in a lawsuit against the State of Alaska and was awarded approximately $100,000 in attorney's fees for a similar type of statute that was invalid under equal protection grounds. And I could certainly go into more details about that. I also would like to correct some of the statements that I heard people making earlier. There's a common myth out there, and I teach national security law, so I'm quite familiar with the events of 9/11, the unfortunate events of 9/11. But there's a myth out there that somehow the terrorist acts of 9/11 could have been prevented if only people were tougher with driver's licenses. In fact, that's not the case at all. That's a national myth that's somehow been perpetrated. And in fact, bills like this and the Real ID Act would have done absolutely nothing to stop the events of 9/11. Terrorists who are from foreign countries can still get on airplanes, even if bills like this go into effect. How can they do that? Well, terrorists aren't always foreigners, for one thing. Terrorists aren't always illegal, for another thing. And even if you were illegal in the United States today and you didn't have a driver's license, you can still get on an airplane with a passport from a foreign country. And that will still be allowed under the Real ID Act when it goes into effect, and when states begin complying with it, that'll still be the case. Also, I think generally people fail to appreciate the value to law enforcement of having as many people licensed as possible. And this may sound radical to members of the committee, but it's my personal view that we should attempt to license or identify everybody and put them in the database. And it's basically because after 9/11, one of the key investigative resources that we had to figure out where the terrorists had been, who they'd talked to, where they'd lived, was the fact that they had driver's licenses. Why is this the case? Well, there is no federal national database that tracks Americans or anybody in the United States, really, unless they voluntarily report to Homeland Security. In the case of the terrorists, the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators has admitted that the driver's license database was key to the post 9/11 investigation because it provided information on what states the terrorists had been in. It gave biometrics, photos, addresses, and all that sort of thing. What will happen with a bill like this is it will reduce the number of people who are in that law enforcement database, the driver's license database, which collectively are the biggest law enforcement database in the country. It's going to make it harder to prosecute people, believe it or not, and it's going to make it very difficult after the fact to figure out where people have been. This bill will have a big effect on lawful residents of the United States, and I can go into details about how this bill doesn't comply with Real ID and what's required by Real ID. I have testified before the United States Senate Judiciary Committee on the driver's license issue, and I'd be happy to review that, but I know my time is short, so I will stop there.
Thank you, Ms. Stock. A lot of food for thought there. Are there questions of Ms. Stock? Representative Gardner, then Gruenberg.
Thank you, Ms. Stock. Did you used to belong to a group called the Gavian Group in Alaska?
Yes, I did. Through the chair, yes, I did.
Okay, then we knew each other years ago.
Yes, we did.
Okay. For the benefit of the audience, it's just an investment club. It may still be in
certified?
Do you have copies of your testimony?
I do not have copies of my testimony. No, I'm speaking from my notes, I guess.
Okay, in that case, I'd be interested in hearing more of the constitutional issues of Senate Bill 189, and particularly problems as it relates to the Alaska Constitution, but also the U.S. Constitution.
Great. I'll go ahead and address that then through the chair.
And Ms. Stock, specifically, could you address it to the Alaska Constitution, if you can for us, because that's what we're mainly charged with. We can go in and do both, but if you could, since time is going to be short. Go ahead.
Okay. I think if whatever what I say will apply to both, the only big difference would be the test that's applied to see whether equal protection is violated. But you're going to get an equal protection violation either way. And the reason for this is the language of the statute in the proposed language. In paragraph H of SB 189, it says that the department may not issue an identification card unless they have evidence that a person is a citizen of the United States, a national of the United States, a legal permanent resident of the United States, or a conditional resident alien. And the problem with that language is it leaves out a huge category of Alaskans who are legally present in Alaska and who are protected under Equal Protection Clause and are supposed to be treated equivalently to lawful permanent residents and conditional residents and citizens and nationals. And these are asylees and refugees. Alaska has a lot of refugees. There are a lot of folks living in the Valley area who are refugees and elsewhere in Alaska. These are persons who've been admitted to the United States because they've been persecuted or have a well-founded fear of persecution in their home country. And they've been admitted indefinitely to the United States. They're going to be here with us forever. Eventually, they will become lawful permanent residents and citizens. And under equal protection principles, they're supposed to be treated similarly. Real ID Act treats them similarly, treats them exactly like citizens, lawful permanent residents. But the Alaska bill does not. So the Alaska bill discriminates against those folks. So it's facially unconstitutional because those folks will only be given a one-year temporary license. And I'm sure they're going to sue because it's a pretty easy case.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lynn?
Does not the bill state somebody has to have legal presence, and somebody here is a refugee, and permitted to be here as a refugee, would that not be legal presence as entertained by this bill?
Well, the problem is in H, you say that you can't issue an identification card under A to people who aren't citizens, nationals, legal permanent residents, or conditional residents. So refugees and asylees aren't going to fall under that. They're going to be excluded. And so the only thing they can get is under I. They can only get identification cards valid during the period of time of the person's authorized stay. Well, for refugees and asylees, that's indefinitely. And it says if the period of stay is indefinite, the expiration date is 1 year. So what you're doing is treating them differently. You're treating them worse than you're treating conditional resident aliens, legal permanent residents, citizens, and nationals, and they're being treated worse, so they're going to complain that there is an equal protection violation, and the federal and state law on that is crystal clear, and they're going to win their case. Summary judgment.
Well, it's not crystal clear to me.
Okay.
And I also would refer to Real ID, because Real ID clearly treats them the same as those other categories of people. It doesn't require them to have shorter licenses, because the lawyers in Congress know that you can't do that because it's unconstitutional.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's see, Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you. Ms. Stock, could you shed any light on the cost issue, the cost of implementing Senate Bill 189?
Well, first of all, Senate Bill, through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, cost is hard to figure out because the DMV has testified that they're already almost in compliance with Real ID, and I don't think that's the case at all. In fact, I think if you take a look at the actual language of Real ID, you're going to see that Alaska DMV is not even close to being in compliance with Real ID. To get into compliance with Real ID, we're talking about probably millions of dollars. And this is an issue that has been debated on the national level by numerous states, by the American Association of Motor Vehicles, national governors. Everybody's upset about this bill because Real ID is essentially an unfunded federal mandate, and it's a huge unfunded federal mandate. As far as the bill that's in front of the Senate, I would defer to the DMV on the actual language of this bill, but it doesn't comply with Real ID. So if your impression is that the cost estimates that DMV is giving you are going to get you into compliance with Real ID, that's not the case. This bill doesn't get you into compliance with Real ID, and you're going to have to spend lots and lots of money. I think the state of Virginia had an estimate of $63 million per year in Virginia to comply with Real ID. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of the states are getting upset and anxious about attempting to comply with it, because they're not getting any money from the federal government to do it.
If I may.
Representative Grimberg.
Would you be a little more specific and list a few of the things that will cost money?
Yes. Let me go ahead and do that. I have the Real ID bill in front of me is finally passed, and just for reference, this is part of the Emergency Supplemental Appropriations Act for Defense, the Global War on Terror and Tsunami Relief, 2005. And it started off as House Resolution 1268. It did not get a whole lot of debate or markup, which is one of the reasons why it's controversial, because there wasn't an opportunity to point out many of the flaws in it. It was passed because everybody wanted to vote for tsunami relief, and it was stuck in a large Department of Defense bill. It actually even contains typos in it, misspellings and things like that, because it wasn't vetted very well. But just to give you an example, the minimum document requirements, the bill requires that the following things appear on a driver's license: the person's full legal name, the person's date of birth, the person's gender, the person's driver's license or identification card number, a digital photograph of the person, the person's address of principal residence. Now, I'll pause there because there's more, but in Alaska, very few people out in the bush have their address of personal resident or principal residence on their driver's license. DMV doesn't put that on there. They put their mailing address. So that's just one point that, you know, we're not in compliance with. There may be federal regulations coming out that will change that. We'll have to see. But that issue is one of the controversial ones. Battered women, for example, have to put their principal residence now on the driver's license under Real ID.
Ms. Dock, I want to interrupt you here. Because I don't want to go beyond this bill and talk about Real ID that are not addressed in this bill. You know, I appreciate that information, but we really need to draw this back to this bill and make sure that we're addressing the items that are addressed in this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grimberg.
The reason I'm asking this is because we have spent some time in this committee discussing the accuracy of the fiscal note, and this testimony goes directly to the inaccuracy of the fiscal note.
Well, Representative Grimberg, other than the part saying that this fiscal note is, the bill is designed to bring Alaska in compliance with the Real ID Act, I want to come back to, which I, you know, whether that's a narrative or not, I want to come back to the fiscal note and what it attaches to this bill and not other provisions that are not included in this bill. So, Ms. Dock, I appreciate that. Were there any other questions for Ms. Dock?
Yeah, I do have.
Representative Grimberg.
Does this bill create any security risks or vulnerabilities, Ms. Dock?
Representative Grimberg, through the chair. In fact, any of these bills as enacted potentially have security issues, and Real ID also has security issues. One of the big issues that gets overlooked, and I heard somebody speaking earlier and saying, do we trust our government? I work for the government, and I generally trust the government, but I also know that we've had huge security vulnerabilities within federal and state governments because of access to data. And one of the things that's happening is when you start imposing more and more requirements on driver's licenses and collecting data and information from people, is you actually create security vulnerabilities. Real ID is going to require that state DMV employees get security clearances. That's another point that why this bill is not in compliance with Real ID. But state DMVs have actually been a big source of security threat because they have documents that they possess that are about people, and if you can get a hold of those documents, you can commit identity theft. The DMV in Alaska has had a problem in the past with this, with identity theft occurring, because DMV did not properly handle documents, and continuing to, you know, build on the idea of collecting documents and not properly securing them does create a potential security threat.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony and the military point of view or people that are actively engaged in that. Are you teaching at West Point now?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I also have a military point of view.
That's correct. I'm not at all saying that you don't, Representative Lynn. Thank you again for your testimony. Keith Bell.
I work for the Student Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell.
Hello.
Would you identify yourself, who you represent, and then go ahead with your testimony, and please try and keep it to 3 minutes?
Certainly. My name is Keith W. Bell. I'm an attorney here in Anchorage. I've limited my practice to immigration law since 1980. I'm a former chairman of the Washington State American Immigration Lawyers Association chapter. We don't have a chapter here in Alaska, but we do have a section of the Bar Association devoted to immigration, and I'm a member of that section. I represent myself in this testimony, but actually I'm representing any number of clients who would love to drive in the state of Alaska, whose presence here is perfectly lawful, but who are not citizens, permanent residents, or even refugees. I'm speaking mainly of non-immigrants, people who are here in non-immigrant visa categories, usually employment-authorized categories, H's, E's, L's, as well as students.
Excuse me, could you... Were you using some abbreviations there? We're not sure what those
categories. Those E's, H's, and L's refer to non-immigrant visa categories. When someone comes to the United States as a tourist, for example, they are admitted in a B status because that's the section of the immigration law that creates their eligibility to be here. So, pardon me for using the shorthand. It's hard to get away from the nomenclature of my field, so I'll spell out what those letters mean. An E is a treaty alien because we have a treaty with the country of the alien's nationality. We don't have a treaty with every country in the world, but with many. And people who enter the United States in the E category are here to do substantial volumes of international trade, or they've made a substantial investment in the United States. And when they come here, they're granted a period of stay of 2 years, which is renewable indefinitely. They bring money and they bring business and they operate motor vehicles. The way the bill is written, that would deprive them of their right to drive because they're not citizens, permanent residents, conditional permanent residents, or even refugees if you were to add that to the list. The same is true of an H, a specialty occupation person. They're here for a maximum of 6 years. They are bachelor's degree people or better. They're here at the request of a United States employer. Their families come with them, and everybody wants to drive. An L person is an intra-company transferee, a business manager or executive of a multinational corporation. They're here for a maximum of 7 years. All of these non-immigrant categories enjoy the right of free entry and exit, and every time they come in, they're given fresh documentation about their status. They want to drive their cars, but they're not permanent residents, conditional permanent residents, citizens, or even refugees. There's also other categories of persons, for example, students who'd like to operate a car. And many of them finish their degrees in the United States and enjoy a period of employability for 1 year called optional practical training. And then they have a document to that effect. It's good for a year. And oftentimes a company will recognize them as a desirable employee on a longer-term basis and will put in a petition to move their visa status from that of a student to that of a specialty occupation worker. But sometimes there's a gap in their permission to be here. For example, they'll graduate in June, they'll have another year of practical training to the following June, and their new visa status won't be effective until October. So from June to October, they are in a gap period, and what our federal government has done in the last several years is to, by memorandum, say we are going to recognize the continuing validity of this person's status in the United States as a student, even though they are neither studying nor working. But as of October 1st, then they enter into a new visa status and are able to return to work. The way the bill is written, I guess they would lose their driver's license privileges because If they had a driver's license, it was keyed to the end of their employment document. Someday in June, they can't drive, and they can't start to drive again until the following October. I guess the thrust of what I'm saying here is that a proposal to regulate the right to drive in Alaska tied to someone's immigration status is entirely unworkable when you get right down to how it would be implemented. There's a whole lot of other perfectly lawful and reasonable categories of persons in the United States and in Alaska who ought to be able to drive, but because the bill is painted with such a broad brush, they'd be immediately unable to drive, and that's not a problem that ought to be adjudicated at the level of a clerk at the state DMV office, whether or not a person's lawful status is properly documented. It's beyond his expertise. It's way above his pay grade, and really the state has no business getting involved with deciding at that level whether a person's federal immigration status is valid or not. And so that's my offering to the committee, and I hope that this bill is defeated.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Gardner.
I have to say it. He's my constituent. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Berta.
Thank you for your testimony.
Okay, thank you. We have testimony here in the audience. Bill Scannell?
Scannell, sir.
Can you come forward? Can you pronounce your name and give the spelling of the last name there?
Yes, sir. My surname is Scannell, Bill Scannell, S-C-A-N-N-E-L-L. My wife made me promise to bring this with me. She made it for me last night. Absolutely.
And the committee might note there's a there's something called the identity packet that is before the committee.
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me the opportunity to address the committee. My name is Bill Scannell. I am Communications Director of the Identity Project, which is a 501c3 nonprofit group devoted to issues of identity, identification cards, and what this means to us as Americans as we make our way through society. I've heard a lot of people talk about the military service. One of my earliest adult experiences was out of college as an intelligence officer serving in West Berlin in the 1980s, where I saw firsthand, and it made a great impression upon me, living in a city surrounded by a wall with guard towers, where there were people in uniform saying, "Ihre Papiere bitte, papers, please." And I think that that's the kind of society that we fought against during the Cold War and were defeated. And I think the last thing that we want to build in our own country is a papers, please society. There are a lot of problems with this bill, and not only in what it says, but what it doesn't. I've heard supporters try to paint this as some sort of immigration measure, but let's really call it what it is, and that is a national ID card. Whether it's a centralized database of information with photographs and accompanying documentation, or whether it's 50 databases plus Puerto Rico plus American Samoa with all of these computerized databases tied into one another, all running in and through the Department of Homeland Security, you still end up with a de facto national identity card allowing really DMV and the state to determine if you should actually comply with the Real ID Act. You get to determine the artwork on your driver's license and very little else. It is a national ID card. What does this mean for our state here? And I'm married with an 18-month-old son with number two on the way, and we're moving to Anchorage full-time in November. So I feel confident in saying this as an Alaskan. What does this mean for us? It means that Real ID and the implementation of not only Real ID but the small portion that is SB 189 is going to be real expensive. I haven't seen a single number out of DMV, but we have seen numbers from other states. We've seen them from California. I was in Sacramento as the head of the DMV testified. $500 million $500 million just to get off the ground. And that was just to get the ball rolling. And he told the Senate, the Finance Committee in Sacramento, that it was going to cost several $100 million a year for the following years just to implement the Real ID Act. Virginia, $232 million over 3 years. Washington State, $251 million. All of these coming from the states themselves. Even a small state with a small populace like New Hampshire, still talking $15 to $20 million the first year. Yes, sir.
You know, can you address? Make sure you wrap up here with
yes.
the comments to Alaska.
Absolutely. In terms of it being very difficult for Alaskans, well, we don't know what this is going to cost us. We don't know what this is going to cost us in our own state. In terms of what Real ID is going to be very difficult for Alaskans is that we're going to have the state DMV determine whether we're citizens or not. And what we'll really be talking about is punishing honest people. We're supposed to be providing documentation to DMV employees, you know, in Anchorage, here in Juneau, and in Bush, Alaska, and a DMV employee is going to determine whether we're a citizen or not. They don't have the training for that.
There's nothing I believe here at all respecting the bill that states that they determine citizenship, only legal presence. Legal presence and citizenship are not the same thing, necessarily.
I stand corrected, yes. But they will also be collecting citizenship documents from honest people and determining whether they can, in fact, have this Real ID card. That's what I was referring to, sir, to the chair.
Thank you. This we're not debating the Real ID Act. We're debating SB 189. Mm-hmm.
And we have your written testimony, and
Yes, sir. Final point I would like to make is that there are, as of yet, from Homeland Security, no final standards issued as to what will be required to be fully Real ID and compliant. We all know that Real ID was passed in a very unusual circumstances through Congress, and it really makes me wonder whether we're putting the cart before the horse here, whether we're sort of halfway complying, getting the ball rolling with Real ID, and we don't even know where it's going to lead to and how much it's going to cost us. But we do know that we have a constitutional right to privacy in this state, and the very idea of putting all of this data up on a national network that any DMV employee anywhere in the country can access, that scares me. Yeah. And I think it should scare all of us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anyone have a question for Representative Gunner?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The right to privacy has certainly been interpreted rather broadly, and I don't even believe it's in the Constitution of the U.S.
In the Constitution of the United States, through the chair, in the Constitution of the United States, it's been interpreted through the Fourth Amendment, Justice Brandeis, but in the Alaska State Constitution, it's right. very, very clear.
I understand that. Okay. And a follow-up. Is there an issue with a national ID? If you break it down this way, the really bad guys are going to be really bad guys, and they're going to satisfy whatever rules we require so they can be really bad guys. But there's 10 million bad guys that aren't really bad guys that are floating all over the country. And we don't know who, where, what, when, or to what degree, what it is they're doing. But we know they're here illegally. And so would it make sense in some degree, I don't mean 100%, but in some degree, to essentially be able to track them since they're illegal? They're here illegally. You know, we call them undocumented, which is a wonderful term, but actually they're illegal aliens. Is there an issue that says leave them alone is better than knowing who they are?
Through the chair, I don't think this is a question of illegal immigrants. If you're here illegally, you're here illegally. None of this truly applies to them. The people that are going to have documents issued to them are people who are legally here. So I believe that we're talking about punishing honest people. It was fascinating to listen to the head of DMV in California be screamed at by one of the senators with deep concerns about illegal immigration. He says, "Are you telling me that Nothing that you can do will have anything to do with, will help us staunch the flow of illegal immigrants into our state. And he says, no, Senator, it will not, because Real ID only applies to citizens and people who are legally here. I suppose we can tag people and make them wear hats if we want to track illegals, but bad people will steal identities. Bad people will create documents that to suffice their purposes. This bill, SB 189, and the Real ID Act punishes honest people.
Just a brief follow-up. If we tag the correct people, the honest people, the legal people, don't we know by a process of elimination who the rest are?
Through the chair, with due respect, Representative Gatto, I served 4 years, 2 months, 18 days in a wake-up in the U.S. Army, and I certainly didn't serve in that capacity, so we'd have a national ID card. If we're going to have a national ID card, let's have a proper national debate about it. I'm against it. You might be perhaps for it, but let's have a national debate. Let's not slip this through across 50 states through bills such as SB 189 and create this by stealth.
Okay, thank you. Is this for discussion with Representative, or is this a question?
One thing that he said, if I may. Please.
No, we have questions for the witnesses.
He just asked the witness a question, and I think I can answer the question if
well,
I may.
Well, no, we've got other witnesses here, so I'm right. Sorry, we're not going to get into committee discussion here okay. Until we get through. Anastasia, thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Scannell.
My name is Anastasia Miranova, and I'm here representing myself. I'm a student from Russia studying here under an F-1 visa.
That was an F-1 visa?
F-1 is the most common student visa.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Anastasia Miranova, and I'm a foreign student. I graduated in 2004 from UAA with a bachelor degrees in mathematics and a bachelor degree in computer science. I am currently working towards my PhD in computer science. I have done research under a grant from the National Institutes of Health. This summer, I will be a research scientist intern at ConocoPhillips. As you can guess, I oppose this bill. I will first tell you about my experience as a foreign student in the United States, and then I will tell you about my specific experiences getting a driver's license in Alaska. My actual educational experiences here have been great. I have had many, many opportunities that I probably would not have had in Russia. I even had a scientific paper published while I was still an undergraduate, thanks to an incredible professor at UAA. I am grateful for the opportunity to be here. I am critical about many parts of this country's immigration procedures, but please do not misinterpret it as lack of gratitude. I originally came under a Rotary exchange program. I was lucky to get here, especially because the U.S. consulates approve only half of Russian student applicants. My visa wasn't issued for the full length of my degree program. It has now expired, and I am allowed to stay as long as I'm in school with a current I-20 enrollment document. Since I arrived, I've had 8 of these forms. I have never violated an immigration law, yet I am photographed and fingerprinted along with every other foreign student whenever I enter this country. My student status and even my class schedule are tracked very closely in a federal computer system called CVIS. Any time when I do not comply with my status, I am reported to the INS as being out of status. Have you ever been fingerprinted at any border? It feels like being arrested. I understand the needs for security, but these measures seem plenty sufficient to me. You don't need to add any more. Because of U.S. visa regulations, I can only travel within North America in my current status. I haven't been able to see my mother in 3 years. She lives alone on $100 a month. If I go home, there is only a 50% chance that I will be issued another visa to return to complete my degree here. I miss my mom more than you can imagine. but I can't take the chance that I would not be able to complete my PhD if I go visit her. It can be a large sacrifice to study here. Now I will tell you about my experiences with my Alaska driver's license. I spent the first 2 years here without an Alaska ID or a driver's license because I did not need them for any reason. I opened a bank account with my passport before I had a social security number. I flew domestically in the US with my passport many times. I have never had a problem. The only reason I did get an Alaska driver's license was because I wanted to get, that was the only way to get reasonable insurance prices on my car. My Russian driver's license doesn't expire until the year 2063. The Alaska DMV wouldn't let me take the driver's test the first time because my car wasn't insured. It was nearly impossible to find insurance without having a US license. It was a catch-22 situation. I eventually found some very expensive insurance that insured my car with my Russian driver's license. I drove here for several months with that, but it got so expensive that I went in again to try to obtain an Alaska license. I was successful that time. Now, under this new law, I have had 8 I-20 student enrollment forms issued to me since I arrived in this country. There is no way I would have been able to return to the DMV 8 times to renew my license. The shortest I-20 form that I was issued was valid for 37 days. I hope you realize how ridiculous and a waste of everyone's time and money it is to make me renew my license twice every 5 weeks. Honestly, I would not have obtained an Alaska license in the first place if I knew that I would have to deal with this. Many of my fellow students would feel the same way. This level of bureaucracy reminds me of Russia very much.
Thank you. And can you kind of wrap up your testimony? How much more do you have?
I have maybe a page with this font. It's a large font.
Well, we really need to get through. We have a couple of questions here. May I?
Sure.
Yeah. Representative Lynn.
I just had one question. Unfortunately, I've never been to Russia. I hope to go someday. Could you tell me, could I go to Russia next week and get a Russian, whatever the Russian for driver's license is, without a legal presence in any of the any place in Russia?
Yes, you could. There are many ways of going about that.
Legally, under Russian law?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Gatto?
Two, actually. One kind of fun and one serious.
Okay.
The fun one is, do you know the origin of the term catch-22? Because you used it in your... Okay, that's the fun one.
Okay.
The other one is, you're a major in math and computer science.
That's right.
This is highly technical and certainly would be of interest to the federal government insofar as security is concerned. I think the federal government would want to know more about a person majoring in math and computer science than they would about a person who's picking corn. So would you agree or disagree that because you have come here and done things that are national security issues, you should be tracked more closely than someone who comes here to be a farm worker?
I am just a student. I came here to study. I should not, the research that I am involved in, if the research that students are involved in are a national security issue, international students would not be allowed to do it in the first place. So if the research that my professor has me do is not a security risk.
Okay, thank you. So just to clarify, you've had 8 I-20s,
yes,
and as you read this bill, you would have been the driver's license could only be issued for the length of your I-20, and therefore, okay, thank you very much for that testimony. We have one further person, Matthew Kerr, and Matthew, you're going to make it really short. In fact, Matthew, Representative Gardner, before you leave, Matthew, we had your testimony before on the other bill, so do we have a motion on this bill?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Before I move the bill, make a motion to move the bill. If we do not move the bill today, would you bring it up again at the next committee hearing?
Well, we'll...
You've heard a couple of hearings on my own companion bill. We've had a pretty good hearing today. But before I move the bill, would you put this at the top of the calendar at the next regular state affairs?
Well, we have had testimony here, and if people tell me that they've changed their... We still have more people to testify on the bill, and well, we would have to take that, but...
So that's a yes or no, Mr. Chairman?
It's not going to be moved ahead of other issues, but it'll still be in our committee.
But would it be heard in time for it to go to the next committee, refer all the finance and to the floor?
I'll consider hearing it again, if that's what you wish.
May I dialogue with the sponsor, representative, just momentarily?
Sure.
What is
we'll take a brief at ease.
Before I make a motion, I would like to just make a short statement. Heard a lot of testimony here today. You know, we're really not debating the Real ID Act. We're not debating national ID cards, and we're not debating immigration policies. What we have been and should have been debating is SB 189. And quite frankly, I just can't believe some of the testimony, or maybe I should say stuff, that I've heard against this bill. What is the agenda here? I don't understand. What world ever happened to common sense, which doesn't seem to be so common? And how in the world can anyone in the United States or Alaska have any legal privileges on driving or anything else if they're not here with a legal presence? And every once in a while, we get a bill before us that makes eminent common sense, and I think this bill is one of those. I think it's certainly supported by the great majority of our constituents all over the state of Alaska. And with that said, Mr. Chair, I would respectfully move and ask for favorable consideration on CS with Senate Bill 189, State Affairs, 24-LS0920/S, and with a zero fiscal note.
Mr. Chair.
It's got a note.
It does not have a zero fiscal note.
It doesn't, with a fiscal note attached, or whatever it is.
Thank you. Is there objection to the motion? Is there objection to the motion?
Yes, and I'd like to
speak to your objection.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just one thing. Representative Gatto, you asked whether there's a federal right to privacy. And there is. It's called a penumbral right under the Ninth Amendment, and the name of the case is Griswold versus Connecticut.
Okay. And I would note that there is more testimony that we have. We have a packet from Mr. Kerr, and we had his testimony. We also had a Mr. Ball online that we didn't hear their testimony, but we need to wrap up on the bill. So we have a motion and objection. Is there any other committee discussion? Seeing none. Madam Chair, would you call the roll?
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Elkins, not present. Representative Lynn?
Yes.
Representative Ramirez, not present. Representative Gardner, not present. Representative Gruenberg?
No.
Chair Seaton?
No.
Two yay, two nay.
The bill failed move from committee, and we'll now take a brief at ease. there. Back in, we have for us SB 86. Let's see, we had some questions that were for the sponsor last time. I believe you want to come forward, identify yourself, and go ahead and let me just quickly get these questions and then have a vote on this.
I have a question for the sponsor.
Representative Grunberg.
Gentlemen, I guess we should ask you to identify yourselves first.
Mr. Chair, my name is Craig Tillery. I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the State of Alaska, representing the Department of Law.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Randy Ruaro, representing the Department of Law.
Thank you, Randy.
And my question, Mr. Chair, through the Chair, to either of you, have you seen the April 26 memorandum and attachment from Dennis Bailey to Les Guerra, this document? Louis, if you could give that to them, maybe if they don't have a copy. Why don't you just take a moment to review that, and I'll ask one question. That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought everybody had copies. I apologize.
Public interest lady.
When you're ready. The members don't seem to have copies, but I'm going to paraphrase it. It's a maybe you could read the if you would, Mr. Tillery, just for the record so everybody. No, why don't you read that?
You would like me to read the entire memorandum?
Yeah, one paragraph.
You asked for an opinion whether a two-thirds vote is required for passage of CSSB 86 per NCRA. The short answer is yes. The bill modifies Civil Rule 82, which provides for court awarded attorney's fees. Article 4, Section 15, Constitution of the State of Alaska requires a two-thirds vote by the members in each house to change a court rule. Accordingly, there should be a section and court rule change notice in the title of the modification of Civil Rule 82.
Thank you. I'd like you to assume.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. I'd like you to assume, for the purpose of my question, assume, although you may disagree on the merits, that is correct legal opinion, and you would get a decision potentially from the Superior Court and the Supreme Court. My question to you is, what would be the cost to the state of defending such a lawsuit? Include in that answer the potential exposure for the other side's attorney's fees.
Mr. Grunberg, I have through the chair, Representative Grunberg. I would have to go back and look at that based on the litigation in HB 145. It would be some relatively small fraction of that. I couldn't give you an estimate right now.
Can you tell me with that follow-up, please?
Representative Grunberg, follow-up.
In the Native Village of Napichuk lawsuit there, can you tell me what the state's cost to date of defending that litigation has been, and include in that answer the state's the award of attorney's fees against the state in that, sir?
Through the chair, no, I don't have that information with me.
I'd appreciate it if you could answer both those questions through the chair in writing to this committee.
I think that what we're doing, appreciate that. I think that we can appreciate the lawsuits are costly, and we will.
I would appreciate it if you would provide me an answer in writing, and I'll distribute it to the rest of the committee.
Okay. Thank you. Randy, would you identify yourself by name? Do you want to address that point at all, or that memo at all, or is that just a disagreement between Ledge Legal and Department of Law? Does Department of Law have a contrary a view of that? Is that what we're looking at here?
Mr. Chairman, this is Craig Tillery. We do have a contrary view. This was actually written in response to the Superior Court's decision. We have looked at this and feel fairly confident the two-thirds vote is not required in order for the legislature to assert sovereign immunity.
Okay, so we just have a difference of opinion between Ledge Legal and Department of Law. Okay.
Yeah, follow
Let's
up.
Let's see. We have Craig, Randy, and I don't see any. We have one other person, and I can't remember. Let me go online for a moment. Michael McLeod Ball, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Were you there for questions?
Yes, I had testified the other day.
Okay, thank you very much. And I just wanted to check and make sure that we had done that, and we had closed public testimony. And Representative Grunberg.
This legislation doesn't just involve... let me just ask you. Does this this legislation also involve the award of costs under Rule 79? Or are you conceding that they would still be entitled to their costs? And as I recall, be immunized from an award of attorney costs in case the state prevailed under 79?
Mr. Chairman, this bill only deals with attorney's fees.
Okay, thank you. We do have someone else. Randy, did you have anything else to give us today? I think I'd ask you earlier, there had been some question about and some presentations by folks that saying that people would only need to win on certain sections of their lawsuit, and they might lose on, you know, four-fifths of them and still get full attorney fees. And I guess the question that had been offered to me was that attorneys, when they're filing lawsuits, are under basically professional and legal obligations to put forward all their defenses or all their claims, and all their, I don't even know what those are, but, you know, there are issues of that could be litigated or theories under which they could win. And that if they, so that their attorneys generally never win on everything. So is that the case, or do we have a percentage of issues that people win on in cases normally?
Mr. Chairman, I understand your question, and I think, you know, an attorney certainly has...
And Randy, would you identify yourself?
This is Randy Moraro, Department of Law. And I understand your question, and I think attorneys, you know, do have an obligation to zealously represent their clients, but I think they also have an obligation not to needlessly drive up, you know, the expenses of litigation by basically throwing in a kitchen sink worth of claims, you know, in the hopes that one will stick. And those claims could be claims of first impression issues. You know, they may look to another state and say, gee, this state came up with a novel theory, I'm gonna, you know, throw that in my, you know. So I think there's a balancing that has to occur there, I guess, is the best answer I can give you.
Okay, but I guess the question was that if someone wins on one or two points, they may be winning on the basically the substance of the suit, even though they drew eight. And I just wanted to get clarified that the Department of Law wasn't meaning that for someone to only win on two sections of the suit meant that they had really lost the suit. That some of the theories of action might prevail on, which could be the substance of the suit, even if it's, you know, a minority of the number of theories. Is that? I'm just trying to get some balance so that the committee,
right,
so that we all understand what this means.
Through the chair, and that's part of the problem with allowing the courts to handle the issue on a case-by-case basis. It's very hard to predict what you actually do have to do to be considered a prevailing public interest litigant.
Okay.
The case law, you know, seems to be constantly evolving. And that, I guess, we would argue why it would be a better function under Article 2, Section 21 of the Constitution for the legislature to decide it.
Okay. And we did have, I didn't realize we had one other person, Kerry Robinson. Is Kerry Robinson here? Yeah. Did you want to testify, Kerry?
I did.
Oh, you did? Great. Thanks. Do we have a motion on this bill? Do we have any committee discussion?
So I'm going to make a motion to move the bill, and I'm doing this for discussion only because I intend to vote against the motion.
with individual recommendations and attach this little note. Hear objections? Object? Any discussion? Madam Secretary, would you call the roll?
Representative Elkins not present. Representative Lim?
Yes.
Representative Rammers not present. Representative Gardner not present. Representative Gruenberg?
No.
Representative Gatto?
No.
Chair Seaton?
No.
One yay, three nay.
So without SB 86 does not pass committee, and it is 10 o'clock, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much for coming today.